Welcome into another edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, post-game edition. We're recording here on January 20th. It's now Wednesday. We're a little past midnight here following Xavier's 81-72 loss to Georgetown at the Cintas Center. I'm joined by the legend Brian Snow. Snow, this was a Snow Theory game, I believe. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but how's your theory go again? Basically, every team will play three games way above their level and three games way below their level per year?
Yeah, you know, within reason. I mean, 10% of the time you're going to be great, 10% of the time you're going to be bad, and then kind of the other 80% of the time is what you are.
And in this case, Georgetown was really, really good. And I think both of us had the same takeaway from this game, which was that Xavier didn't so much lose this one as Georgetown really won it. They came into the Cintas Center, and quite honestly, I watched a lot of tape on Georgetown leading into this game, put together a performance that I hadn't seen anything like from them on tape in the film that I watched. They're the best they can play, I think, and Xavier caught them on the wrong night. And on the flip side, Xavier had some issues of its own. You know, I think where we come in, let's do this. Why for you, Brian, was it not a bad performance for Xavier? Why did you not feel that Xavier played bad?
One, I mean, Georgetown got open looks. Let's not act like they didn't. But Xavier, they made a lot of contested shots too. I didn't think Xavier's defense was awful. I thought it was solid. So when the other team's making tough shots, that, you know, to me, you're doing your job. And then offensively, I thought they executed is probably the wrong term. I thought they ran their stuff well and they got the shots they were looking for really well. Now, they didn't always make them, but they got in the right positions. They shared the ball. They did everything you would want as a coach to do. And then they missed some shots, which is fine. But they shot the three ball pretty well out with the last minute and a half excluded from that. I thought they shot the three ball pretty well. And they got good looks. So if I'm looking at it and I'm saying, all right, they did this, this, and this pretty well defensively, I don't think they were bad. I think Georgetown was really good. You know, that's a solid performance. It's a good enough, you know, and I don't want to be the guy who bags on the A-10. I think that's stupid. But if Xavier was playing George Washington today, Xavier wins. They were playing Georgetown, who, by the way, has Devontae Smith-Rivera, borderline five-star recruit, Trey Campbell, four-star recruit, Jesse Govan, four-star recruit, Isaac Copeland, borderline five-star recruit. I mean, like, they're on scholarship for a reason, too. I mean, they're really good. If you recall, Rick, me and you got into this argument. I don't know if argument's the right term, but we debated preseason,
right,
who was the second best team in the Big East. I said Georgetown, and you didn't. And to this point in the season, you've clearly been right. But this is the Georgetown team I expected all year.
Right, and this is why you thought that, because of the talent that they have. And to be quite honest, I mean, like, look, Isaac Copeland didn't score. And we both know Isaac Copeland's immensely talented and has a lot of upside still. So I think there's still a lot of room for this Georgetown team to grow, not only this season, but going forward. But I completely agree with you on the side of the way I look at a bad performance typically is, did you come out flat? Did you not show up ready to play? Did you not play as hard as you could have? Did you not battle as hard as the other team on the glass? Which maybe that argument could be made, but I didn't think Xavier gave a bad effort on the glass. I thought Georgetown gave a better effort on the glass. Like, they were winning. It's not like James Farr wasn't trying to get around Bradley Hayes. He just couldn't a lot of the time. And you know, Trayvon Blewett had 10 rebounds. I thought he was incredibly active, but there were times, too, at the end where he's trying to come up with rebounds and just couldn't get around some of Georgetown's guys. So, again, credit Georgetown for a lot of those things. But did you play sloppy? Did you turn the ball over a lot? Xavier had 5 turnovers total in this game. So it's not like you can say a lot of those those things that I normally associate with a bad performance. I wouldn't say Xavier checked many of those boxes. It was simply and again, credit to Georgetown for some of this, I think, because I do think their length and overall size in the paint gave Xavier some trouble when going into finish. Now, part of that is Georgetown's MO all season has been that they foul a ton. Xavier wasn't able to get those calls tonight. Part of that's probably on Xavier. Part of it might have been on the officials. Part of it probably was on Georgetown just doing a better job all around, being maybe a little more quicker, a little bit more focused and in the gaps and playing together as a team, a little more cohesive. Maybe they didn't have to foul as much and were able to still contest some of Xavier's shots. So I think that's where both of us are kind of at on the, yes, it wasn't Xavier's best performance, and no, it's not good that Xavier lost this game at home, obviously, but it's tough to say they played poorly with that effort. You mentioned you beat George Washington. Heck, I think if you go back to Saturday, Xavier beats Marquette with this type of performance. Like, Xavier played as well tonight as they did against Marquette on Saturday. They just weren't able to finish the shots to come up with the win, and Georgetown played really well, and Marquette didn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reality of the beast, and, you know, that's why we didn't expect Xavier to go undefeated this year. That's why when people were discussing what we expected from Xavier in the Big East season when Xavier was undefeated, most people said probably like four losses, because you're going to have things like this happen where the other team plays really, really well.
And I've seen Chris Mack after a lot of losses. I shouldn't say a lot of losses, but I've seen him after most of his losses. This was probably the most calm, the most unfazed I've seen him. He was not really upset after this loss. Not happy that they lost, obviously, but a lot of times he calls out a player, or, you know, he a lot of times goes back to the, we didn't show up ready to play, we didn't come out and play with enough energy. There was none of that tonight. He came out and was pretty calm about it and just said, we tip our caps to Georgetown. They made shots that guys for them don't normally make. I mean, at the end of the day, all the stuff we can talk about, all the analysis, we can break this game down as much as we want. If Trey Campbell doesn't have 21 points, if he has 5 points like he's supposed to have, which would have been a good night for him, we're not having this conversation. I mean, Xavier wins.
Yeah.
He came out and scored 21, was 7 of 11 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3, and he's a guy who doesn't normally really shoot. I mean, I'm not saying he's not talented. I actually like Trey Campbell. I think he's a nice piece, and considering they don't really have a point guard, I think he's a guy they need to step up. But this hasn't been who he is. Like, Xavier didn't have the wrong game plan coming in here or something. Trey Campbell made plays, and you gotta say hats off to him. Snow, let me go here next. I don't think either one of us think there's a huge cause for concern here, but it is a loss at home. So what's the biggest takeaway for you? What is the biggest concern coming out of this game? I mean, is it Remy Abel? Is it the way the bigs played without, you know, and knowing that you haven't really gotten the best out of Jalen Reynolds all year? Is it the 1-3-1 maybe getting exposed a little bit the last two games? Is it the fact that size gave X some trouble finishing in the lane? What was the if there's one concern for you, are any of those going to, you know, linger and continue after this game?
Man, what am I concerned about? I would be concerned if Edmund Sumner starts hitting a wall. That would be my biggest concern. Now, this is the first time he's played like it this season, but, you know, we're at, you know, what is this, game 20? Something like that, Rick?
Yep.
19? This is about the most games he's ever played during a season. So is he going to start to get tired? I don't think so, but that would be my concern looking forward, because I think the rest of the stuff is probably fairly correctable or just kind of one of those days type of thing. Like, as awful as James Farr was today, and he was awful, he hasn't been like that this season. He just hasn't. So I think there's aberrations. I thought Jalen was actually pretty good today.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought Jalen gave them a little bit when he finally got off the bench and got into the game. But again, the thing with Jalen isn't that he's playing terribly every night out. Like, his numbers aren't even all that far off from what we probably expect out of him. To me, I think it's just the fact that Xavier hasn't seen Jalen carry them yet. Like, there hasn't been that one game. Like, tonight would have been a great example. If Jalen could have came in and really taken it to Bradley Hayes and Jesse Govan, like, that would have been huge. That he's the type of guy that could have overwhelmed them and given Xavier a lift, as he showed last year in the postseason when they were making their run. He was, you know, he gave them huge lifts in the postseason and really elevated their entire team with his interior play. He hasn't been able to do that yet, even though he's had games where he's okay. Like, tonight he was fine, I think. I think the big concern with Jalen is, it's like, is it going to come back at some point? You know, we've seen it. It's a sophomore year, the junior year. So far through the senior year, we haven't even seen the flashes. So is he completely detached? Is he removed from this already? Or is he going to get going at some point? That would probably be my concern with Jalen.
Yeah, I think I think we need to put things in context here. Xavier's goal, realistically, right now, is to go to the Final Four. And the reason we say that is because they're a top 10 team. They've proven to be a top 10 team throughout the season. So when you're a top 10 team, your goal is to go to the Final Four and, you know, hopefully win a national title. That's every team in the top 10. In order for that to happen, Xavier has to have Remy Abel and they have to have Jalen Reynolds. Now, I know there's a lot of talk on the board about what to do with Remy Abel and Remy stinks right now and all that. But here's the reality. If Xavier wants to beat Oklahoma, they need a guy like Remy Abel. I mean, someone's got to guard Buddy Hield, and no one else on the roster realistically is going to do that unless you want a freshman in Kaiser Gates going up against the National Player of the Year. Good luck with that. Right. So to me, you start looking at a team like that. Xavier needs Remy Abel. So I don't think you can go away from Remy Abel right now. I think you have to, you know, get into his head. This is where the coach is. I had a coach tell me that his job is 90% social worker, 10% basketball coach, and part of being a social worker is psychology. They gotta, you know, get the psychology to get Remy going, to figure out what it takes to get him going. Because Xavier needs that athletic 6'4", 6'5", wing defender if they want to get to the Final Four. And then they need Jalen Reynolds to have flashes of dominance. So you have to stick with Jalen Reynolds as well. And might that cost you a game against Georgetown because you stuck with Remy too long? Yes. But if it helps you get to that end game goal, then it's worth it.
Yeah, and I mean, and to be honest, you know, like Remy played 23 minutes tonight, and the last two games they have cut into his minutes a little bit. I mean, it's not quite, you know, he was closer to 30 last year, and for earlier in this season, they have cut him back a little bit now. But, you know, coming out of tonight's game, I think I was a little more on the side of what do you do with the lineup, and do you need to figure out, you know, a way maybe JP takes more of his minutes or something. But after listening to your point, I think I agree with that more, that you're right. Like for Xavier to be its best, and when we've seen Xavier at its best, Remy has been a big part of that. And whether it's offense, whether his offense is there or not, we all know his defense is going to be important for individual matchups. Like there's very few top tier teams where you can look at it and feel good about Xavier's chances matching up defensively without including Remy Abel in your lineup. So you bring up a very good point about for Xavier to reach its peak, it needs Remy Abel. And then the second part of that, of course, relates to Jalen, as you were bringing up as well. I think you're right. For them to be their best at the end of the year, it's going to require Jalen reaching his potential, or at least playing somewhat close to it and being a guy who is at least the threat. Like right now, I don't think anyone in the locker room, anyone in the arena feels that Jalen is that threat to be Jalen. No, I don't think he has the confidence in himself. I don't think his teammates have that confidence in him. I don't think the coaches do. I don't think any of the fans do. Not that that matters at all. But I just – Jalen's not Jalen right now. And until they see that flash, I think that is going to be a big concern. The 1-3-1, do they need to – to tonight, I don't think it mattered. Like they couldn't stop him in man-to-man. They couldn't stop him in 1-3-1. And a part of that is, like you said, Georgetown was hitting tough shots, even when Xavier was playing good defense. And then when Xavier wasn't playing good defense, they were taking advantage of that as well. But I think we've seen, you know, in the Marquette game I mentioned, I think the game plan was we're okay with Marquette taking open threes. But do you feel that teams are getting a little more comfortable against this 1-3-1 the more they see it, the more Xavier plays it? Do you think maybe they need to go back to making that more of a change-up and sticking to the man-to-man a little more often?
Yeah, I think so. But I think a lot of that's matchup-driven as well. Like against Providence, you know, coming up, I think you're going to want to play more 1-3-1. Against Seton Hall, you're going to want to play more man, because the last thing you want is guys getting open looks, you know, from Seton Hall. But, you know, by that same token, Seton Hall has some guys who can't make shots either. But, you know, I do think, you know, the man, and I'm a man-to-man guy in general, you know, nice defense. So I'm always going to be biased towards that. But I think teams, you know, especially in the Big East that have now seen it, are going to be more comfortable with it. And their guys are going to understand it a little bit better. But I still think you play both, and then you kind of go with gut feel a little bit during the game as to what to go with.
And for me, that is a bit of, like, the comfortability thing is a bit of concern with the 1-3-1, because my take all along with this 1-3-1 has been the biggest reason for its success is the fact that it confuses teams. I think it makes it hard for them to get into their offense. They don't always know what to run against it. And even when they have a set game plan, I think sometimes they're just hesitant because of the way Xavier plays it. If teams do get more comfortable and they kind of know what to expect and they're a little more confident in where the ball needs to move and they can move it faster, I don't know that that 1-3-1 is as good of a defense, as good of an option. I think you could see more man-to-man in conference play. But then you get into you get back into the tournament, I think the 1-3-1 completely becomes a huge weapon again because you're not going up against teams who are playing against it twice a year, every year in the Big East. Snow, one more thing I wanted to ask you on about sort of these, not necessarily issues, but concerns or questions about what's going on right now with this team. Lineup rotations. I guess my thing would be this team is deep. We've been talking about how great their depth is all year. Tonight, it seemed like Chris was rotating just constantly different lineups in and out. And granted, when you look at like the overall minutes, they don't look skewed too bad. It looks fair. You know, I think you don't look at anyone's minutes and say, oh man, that seems off. But I do, someone posted something about guys getting in a rhythm or whatever. I do kind of wonder, is there like, are they in the midst of a kind of a feeling out process after, you know, you kind of added Kaiser to the mix a little bit. You're not 100% certain what you're going to get out of your bigs between James and Jalen and Sean right now. And you also still have the thing of like Edmund Sumner, Miles Davis, Trayvon Blewett, who's shooting the ball well out of those guys and playing that along with the card of Remy Abel's not giving you much offensively, but you need him on the court for defense. There's a lot of moving pieces all of a sudden after it seemed like this team had everything kind of set. Did it interest you at all tonight the way he was kind of – like I guess what I'm saying is I'm a little surprised the lineup situation is this fluid again all of a sudden after it seemed like things were so set there for most of the year.
I think today part of that had to do with – when guys got in foul trouble. I think Miles got in a little bit of foul trouble and that threw things off. Jalen having whatever issue Jalen had at the beginning of the game probably threw things off because let's be honest, Sean O'Mara doesn't come in before Jalen Reynolds unless Jalen at some point in time during the week did something stupid.
Yeah, although I thought it was weird that Sean only played 8 minutes because he was really good in his minutes in the first half, I thought.
Yeah, except for the times where he just decided he was not passing the basketball, which is really weird to me because when I saw Sean in high school, he didn't even look to score half the time. He looked to pass.
Really
and
unselfish.
Now and now he's refusing to pass out of the post. So I think that has to be addressed. But
that confidence is a funny thing, right? Like you work so hard to get a kid confident enough to go dominate in the post, and now all of a sudden you're like, well, you know. Throwing it back out to an open shooter might not be a terrible idea once in a while.
So I just think all that led to some weird rotations in the first half. And then, you know, they kind of got caught in that bad rotation when it was 27-20 and the game changed. Now, all I remember is Trey Campbell hit a couple threes, and then I think it was a turnover layup, and all of a sudden Georgetown was up.
Yeah.
But I think they got kind of caught in a weird rotation there. And Mac doesn't like to call timeouts to stop runs. He doesn't. He's never really liked to, and a lot of coaches don't. Some do. He's not, and I actually agree. You want to have your guys play through it, and so I think that lineup was out there probably a minute or two longer than he wanted. But I think that's just kind of a weird thing because of whatever the heck Jalen did, because of Miles' foul trouble,
and matchups to a certain extent, because they really just couldn't find a matchup that was working for the first 10 minutes of the game,
and you get that little panic. Where it's like, oh crap, this isn't working. Let's try Kaiser here, you know, to try to stop the bleeding defensively, and then that didn't work. And so you're shuffling back. Okay, well now we need more offense, and Edmund probably still can't go all the time like he was a month ago when he, you know, just because his wind's probably not all the way back. So now Larry's coming in, and all of a sudden you end up with Larry, Sean, and Kaiser out there, and that's never happened before. So I just think. A confluence of things. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. I don't think it's anything to worry about. I just think when the other team plays really, really well and you lose, you're going to invent reasons why it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. But the lineup thing is, it does interest me because it's something that I've noticed not just this game, but the last couple kind of, really since Edmund kind of came back in that Marquette game, it was just kind of like all of a sudden, so it – It doesn't seem like just adding Kaiser into the mix and playing him a little more would do all that. But I think it's just more of a thing where Mac has more options now. So there's probably a little bit more of trying to play the matchups of, you know, you have more options to try to stop a guy who's hurting you. So maybe they're doing a little bit more mixing and matching, trying to find the right group. And I don't know. I just wonder if that maybe does lead to a little bit of guys maybe need some time together out on the court to get into a rhythm, to get in that flow, because it seemed like they kind of had that set early on in the year and everything was working really well. And not that everything isn't working well now, but it's just something to watch, I think, going forward, is where is that lineup? Do they settle into something that's a little more regular, or do they keep going with this mixing and matching? Because, look, you have a lot of different pieces that are kind of interchangeable, and that's sort of why you put the roster together this way. Maybe that's kind of the plan. I certainly trust the coaching staff to figure that out, and I think they'll do fine. They've done a pretty good job thus far. Trayvon Blewett's effort, I think, worth pointing out. Didn't shoot the ball as well as he would have liked, and mostly on like finishing, getting into the lane and pull-up jumpers, things of that nature. He was 3 of 8 from 3, but he had 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 turnover in this game. I thought, you know, his effort deserved to be pointed out, because it seems like it seems like a lot of times the message board, Twitter, that type of stuff, the fan base glosses over a lot of the things Trayvon Blewett does. I hear a lot of, like, you know, complaining about Trayvon Blewett, and it's a weird thing for me, because he's the best player on this team, and tonight I thought illustrated how well-rounded his game has been this year, so I wanted to point out his effort. Snow, can we talk about this weird fan thing that everyone, like, I don't get the mindset of the team that I cheer for lost, so I have to tear them apart now. Like, I'm not a real fan if I don't tear my team apart after a loss. It's a weird phenomenon to me. And it's not just Xavier basketball. It's anything. I hear it all the time. But it's weird to me that people can't look at a game like that and then be like, oh, you know, it's Xavier played pretty well and Georgetown beat them. It's weird to me that it's like, no, you don't understand. There are definitely fatal flaws with this team, and they're never going to win again.
I don't understand it. It's like fans and coaches are all morphing into the same person, and that's the scariest thing in the world, because a college coach is the most miserable human being on the planet. And, like, fans are now, like, now that they have more information and they hear more and they see more, they're turning into coaches, and that does nobody any good. Be happy, people. And that's coming from me. So just consider the source on me saying be happy. And then, you know, but I don't get it either. I don't understand it. I mean, at the end of that game, I was like, wow, Georgetown played really well. It's like those guys are on scholarship too. You know, it's like, do I think Bill Self's losing his mind today because they lost to Oklahoma State? No, he's probably saying Oklahoma State played really well. You know, like, that's the nature of the beast. That you, when you play 30 whatever regular season games, if you win 25, you're doing good. And 5 times you're going to get beat, and most of the time, half the time, it's going to happen because the other team played really well. Sometimes you lose and sometimes you get beat. Xavier didn't lose today. They got beat, and there's nothing wrong with that. They played, they gave effort, they executed fairly well. Just the other team on this day was better.
I'm about to be the worst human being ever, like the worst sports talk radio guy ever right now, but is Xavier elite?
No, because no one's elite this year.
Okay, I completely agree with that. Is Xavier in the top echelon right now? I mean, are they, like, do you still have them in that group of as one of the best teams in college basketball?
Absolutely. Let's say Oklahoma's the best team in college basketball. Let's just say we feel they're number one, and we may not feel that way, but we'll use them for an example. You look at, you know, Kadeem Latin at center trying to guard Xavier's guys. Ryan Spangler's trying to guard Trayvon Blewett. You feel real good about that if you're Lon Kruger?
No.
You know, Jordan Woodard at 5'11" has to guard Edmund Sumner. You know, it's just like, you know, I'm not saying if you're Xavier you feel great about Remy Abel against Buddy Hield or you know, Miles Davis against Isaiah Cousins. But, you know, you're looking at it saying, all right, that's allegedly the best team in college basketball. Rick, if you were doing a matchups, how many matchups would you favor Oklahoma in?
All right, probably two.
Yeah.
probably two, and you named them.
Yeah, that's the reality. I mean, like, North Carolina, is anybody scared of North Carolina? God, no. You know, like, people laugh at North Carolina because, quite honestly, they're soft. And they are soft. So if those are the two best teams in the NCAA right now, you know, Iowa lost to Dayton. And Dayton's a really good team. But Iowa lost to Dayton without Dyshon Pierre. And now people are going to say they're the greatest thing walking because they beat Michigan State twice. Well, how good is Michigan State?
Did you really just say Dayton is a really good team on this podcast where it's going to go out to our message board and we're going to have to read the replies?
SF Terps. Go Terps.
That's a great non sequitur response. let me get back to the elite there, top echelon too. I guess here's my thing, where I was going with that. I think, you know, we both agree that Xavier is a top team in college basketball, is right there, as good as anyone in the country. I think there was a way for them to lose this game that would have changed my opinion on that. Like, I think a home loss to Georgetown in a different fashion might have made me question that a little bit more and think, are we sure? Do we, you know, like, is there a little bit of a question here with this team? Tonight wasn't that night, though. Like, this performance did not make me question whether or not Xavier is legitimately a top-tier team. And I guess that's what I was getting at with this topic, is just this performance. Like, Xavier didn't come out and Georgetown didn't take them out of what they wanted to run. You know, they didn't, like, present all these problems that Xavier just couldn't get over. It wasn't like Xavier couldn't create offense. They were fine getting – to me, they got a lot of looks they wanted, couldn't finish them off. You know, same thing on the defensive end. I didn't think it was like, oh, man, like, there's just no possible way they'll ever be able to stop DSR and Bradley Hayes at the same time, which is kind of, to me, what you typically have to do to beat Georgetown on a standard night. You know, you don't plan on those. You don't plan on Trey Campbell scoring 22 points, but he did. So again, that would just be my overall kind of final takeaway from all this, is that yes, a loss at home to Georgetown is not ideal. And I think that could have changed my opinion slightly about this team had it come in a different way. But with the performance I saw tonight, I'm still very high on this Xavier team. Doesn't change anything the way I feel about them at all in terms of their chances of making a postseason run.
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to be addressed. You know, obviously I talk to a lot of coaches all the time. And, you know, one of the most common statements I hear this year is, I don't know who's the top five teams, but I know we're not one of them. And I've had a lot of coaches who, by the way, are in the top five telling me that. Like, well, you're telling me we're a top five team? There's no way. So that's just kind of the way everyone feels right now, is, you know, like, are we really a top five team? So there is some of that to it, but Xavier's one of the teams with the least flaws. And at the end of the day, your game plan against Georgetown is going to be, let's make Trey Campbell and Reggie Cameron beat us. And you know what? Today, Trey Campbell and Reggie Cameron, to a lesser extent, beat Xavier.
Yep. Anything else, to finish this off?
I think we covered it pretty good, Rick.
All right. That does it for this edition of the Dayton Victory post-game podcast. Xavier loses to Georgetown 81-72. For the legend, Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.